Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. It's Thursday, the 15th of January. Thank you so much for downloading today's podcast. In this episode, we'll hear from a farmer who says there's been a lack of provision for livestock as the water crisis continues. We'll take a look at the future of Faversham Cottage Hospital. And if you've ever been frustrated by overrunning roadworks, then keep listening. We've got some good news for you. All of that still to come. But first, let's take a look at our top story today. A former Kent police officer has been barred from the force for life after inappropriately touching two female colleagues. Louis Southern, who was based in Folkestone, is said to have targeted the women during a work night out in 2022 and at a previous Christmas event. Dan Essen has been covering this story for the Kent Online podcast. He's been able to answer a few questions for us. First of all, Dan, can you give us a bit more detail about the allegations against Louis Southern?
So, former PC Louis Southern was a regular police officer serving, for the most part, in the Folkestone local policing team since about 2017. Essentially, he was hauled before a Kent Police misconduct panel early this week over allegations that on a work social in around Christmas time 2022, he, at the Cuban nightclub in Canterbury, he basically groped the breast of a much younger female colleague. There was another allegation which wasn't technically the substance of this misconduct hearing. It had been previously dealt with and resulted in disciplinary findings. But evidence was also heard from another police officer that sometime before this first incident, at another social event while in a car, he essentially, PC Louis Southam, grabbed her inner thigh and squeezed it. And this was brought before the panel as more or less evidence that he had form for this kind of thing.
And what were the thoughts of the panel following the two-day hearing?
So the first day of the hearing was the hearing of evidence from both of the police officers who say they'd been the victim of his behaviour. And the second one was largely deliberations at the panel on procedure. But the panel found that on the balance of probabilities, the allegations were proven and amounted to gross misconduct. It's important to say that it's not a full criminal trial. They're not held to beyond a reasonable doubt standard of evidence. It's balance of probabilities. But essentially, the police force say they believe he committed these actions, they were gross misconduct, and that means if he was still serving as a police officer, which he's not, he would have been dismissed summarily on the day, and he's been barred for life from serving as a police officer, so he won't be able to go and work for another police force in the future, for example.
We know he'd already resigned from the force, but he does deny the allegations.
Yeah, he did already resign from the force. His resignation took effect on December 30th. But he refused essentially to cooperate with the inquiry in any way. He had to, while he was still a serving officer, he had to submit written evidence, which he did and which was read out to the hearing. And in that evidence, he denied any sexual touching or sexual misconduct of any sort. He also said that, you know, his family support him, and sort of recounting his career since 2017, he also said that his reason for non-cooperation was to protect his own mental health. So I guess make of that what you will. But he didn't even instruct a Police Federation representative to make his case at the hearing this week. So essentially, he wasn't there to defend his case, and nobody did it in his stead. He denied all the allegations, but obviously the panel found otherwise, and say that they think he did it, and he would have been sacked for it.
Thanks so much, Dan. You can read the full report by clicking on the story on the homepage of Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
A motorcyclist has been seriously injured in a crash with a car in Gillingham. Police, paramedics and firefighters were called to Woodlands Road at about 7 yesterday evening. The biker was taken to a London hospital for treatment. Two men have been arrested after a suspected stolen car was involved in a crash on the Thanet Way. The Porsche was reported missing from Birchington yesterday morning. Police pursued it onto the A299 where it collided with another vehicle. One person was taken to hospital for treatment, but the injuries are not described as life-threatening. Two suspected drug dealers have been arrested after a Mercedes was stopped by officers in Ramsgate. Patrols became suspicious of the vehicle in Boundary Road. It was searched and officers found Class A drugs and cannabis. The men, both aged 27 and from the local area, have been released on bail. Now, a Kent farmer says not enough provision has been made for livestock during the recent water crisis in the county. County. Thousands of homes and businesses have been without supplies since the weekend. Claudine Russell owns Horland's Farm in Marden near Tunbridge. They have cattle, sheep and horses. She's been speaking to Kristen from our colleagues at KMTV.
So we've got cattle, sheep and horses on the farm, and they're obviously, the cattle are in sheds for the winter, horses are in overnight and the sheep are out in the fields, but we need more water in the winter than we would do in the summer, and we've been off yesterday and today. We're lucky we put some rainwater harvesting tanks in. I think without those we'd be really worried here.
And what communications have you had from South East? I mean, in terms of the water and when it's going to come back, do you feel like the communication has been what it needs to be?
This is the bit I'm really annoyed about. So we rang up and they told us we didn't have a problem, and we obviously know that we did. And then we weren't featured on the map for ages. I think our neighbours rang as well, and they were told they were the first people that had rung from our area. They've got livestock as well. So the communication's been really poor, and all we've been getting is alerts that say the wrong thing. So I think we've had about 2 text messages now saying we're back on, and we're not. And I think that's the thing. You know, we don't mind, things happen, you know, we know there's issues, but when it's a big problem like this, we would have appreciated better communication throughout the whole situation, really.
So you're not quite sure when it's going to be turned on, say they're working on it.
Yeah.
Are you worried at all? I mean, I know you've got these tanks, but say they run out, I mean, I'm sure it won't last that long, but what, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, we thought they might put some provision in for livestock. They haven't done anything, and obviously you can't really water livestock with 2-litre bottles. So if we didn't have these tanks, we'd be really worried, yeah.
So you're not quite sure when it's going to be turned on, say they're working on it.
Yeah.
Are you worried at all? I mean, I know you've got these tanks, but say they run out, I mean, I'm sure it won't last that long, but what... I mean,
we thought they might put some provision in for livestock. They haven't done anything, and obviously you can't really water livestock with 2-litre bottles. So if we didn't have these tanks, we'd be really worried, yeah.
And what would happen?
I don't know. We'd have to get water to them somehow, wouldn't we? So yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of bucketing, manual work, which we try and avoid with all of the things we've put in place. But honestly, don't know. We'd have to be going to and from and getting loads of 2-litre bottles, or getting some friends and relatives to fill up containers for us, yeah.
Is there anything you'd want to say to maybe local farmers in Kent who are maybe in the same position as you or don't have water?
I mean, obviously I'd say invest in rainwater harvesting if you haven't got it. But no, I think, you know, farming's tough as it is, you know, every single day of the year. So I'm sure we muddle through, don't we? But it's not great when something like this happens.
Now, this all comes as it's been revealed South East Water is going to be investigated by the regulator Ofwat following major disruption to supplies. They'll look into whether the company's met customer service obligations as thousands of residents remain without water. Bosses have blamed bad weather and say they have a new plan to restore the network in Tunbridge Wells by tomorrow morning.
Kent Online News.
A shipping container has caught alight in a suspected arson attack in Maidstone. Crews were called to tackle the blaze on Launder Way yesterday evening. No one was hurt, but it's thought to have been started deliberately. Elsewhere, 2 fire engines have been sent to tackle a bedroom blaze in Broadstairs. It broke out on Rumsfield Road at around 7 last night. No one was hurt, and it's unclear how it started. Bosses in Kent have announced plans to get tougher on companies who break the rules while carrying out roadworks. In future, the County Council will be able to prosecute firms who persistently create avoidable traffic disruption. The authority issues permits for work to be carried out. 10,300 were given out in the 12 months to April 2024, up by 3,700 on 3 years earlier. Simon Finlay is our local democracy reporter.
Anyone who spends any time on the roads in around Kent will invariably encounter a set of temporary traffic lights or roadworks or a closed road, as I did this morning. And essentially, Kent County Council are trying to reflect this growing frustration amongst the residents of Kent that the people who kind of flout or willingly or willfully transgress the rules regarding closing roads are going to face prosecution. Now, they've got the legislation to do it. Currently, they can fine them. The fines are small, and most of these companies would be sort of seeing the fines as barely a business expense. This will lead to prosecution, but they will be trying to focus on those companies that are habitual or repeated offenders.
What sort of rule breaking are we talking about? What sort of things are they doing?
It's actually quite a lot of different things. It can be anything from causing avoidable holdups, causing avoidable disruption. It can be health and safety issues in terms of the state in which roads might be left behind in terms of the motorists who use them, or indeed the workers working on the sites themselves. Or it can be causing damage to council property. The council has to abide by several bits of legislation, such as the Highways Act, New Roads and Streetworks Act, Traffic Management Act, and these are all meant to keep the roads moving and keep them safe. Now, if they're unable to do that because people are overrunning on works or they're failing to reinstate the roads properly once they're finished, then they can take this action. It's not been done before. As I said, the policy, so up to this point, has always been to fine them. But the fines are small. This is meant to be getting people to take a bit more responsibility for the work that they're doing and try and keep the traffic flowing.
I guess no particular companies were named and shamed, were they?
No, but it tended to be directed at subcontractors of larger companies who come in afterwards and basically put the whole thing back together again once the work has been done. That was the implication that I took from the meeting.
Now, this comes as contractors are promising to work extra hours to finish roadworks outside a business park in Herne Bay. Motorists say they're being held hostage by the four-way traffic lights on the entrance to Altira Park, with some saying it takes 40 minutes to get through. Utility firm Stark say they're carrying out electrical work but will extend the hours to have it completed before the January 23rd deadline.
Kent Online News.
A Kent prison is going to get improved training and anti-drone measures following government intervention. HMP Swale on Sheppey was placed into emergency measures after a damning report last month. It's now been given extra specialist staff, improved training for frontline officers, and new windows and netting to stop drugs and weapons being flown in. We've been hearing from a Kent MP who says she'll be keeping a close eye on Faversham Cottage Hospital this year. The 16-bed inpatient unit suddenly closed in July last year, with health bosses saying there was a lack of staff. It was able to reopen again following a recruitment drive, but Mid-Kent and Faversham MP Helen Waitley is concerned the NHS is moving in a different direction.
There's sort of a bit of the recent history on this where, the hospital is hugely valued by people in Faversham and supports patients from a wider area, particularly people being discharged from acute hospital who need that time of rehabilitation and help to get back on their feet, crucially after a stay in a major hospital where very rarely do patients get very much physio, much so the hospital will tell you they try and are often just stuck in the beds. So the Cottage Hospital does a great job of helping get people ready to actually go home. And then suddenly in July, at absolutely no notice, the hospital closed. They said they didn't have enough staff. They didn't warn anybody about it. I heard about it actually 24 hours before. And they sent a lot of signals, the NHS trusted, that they saw the answer for the future being about people going home first or straight home from hospital. Now, there are times when people can do that, but not everybody can do that. So I work really hard with local campaigners to say, no. It's essential to have facilities like Faversham Cottage Hospital up and running. And during that time, while it was closed for months. The temporary closure went from being a few weeks to being months. And we saw William Harvey Hospital so full that they had patients in the Costa Coffee in beds. They closed the coffee shop for that. So clearly, the capacity is needed. Anyway, the good news on that is that the Faversham Costa Hospital has just reopened. It had a very successful recruitment of staff. Actually, lots of staff wanted to come and work in Faversham, so that's great. And that's had a good redecoration and improvement inside as well. But I'm not going to take my eye off the ball, because I do know that in the run-up to it reopening, or during the summer, the NHS Trust talked a lot about how they saw the future as being all about home first and virtual wards and not having facilities like Faversham Cottage Hospital, and talked about it not being at big enough scale and things like that. So I'm going to be keeping a very close eye that the future is bright for Faversham Cottage Hospital, and that we safeguard it for years to come.
An appeal to reverse a decision to redevelop part of Chatham Docks into a business park has been dismissed. ArcelorMittal Kent Wire, who have a warehouse at the docks, argued the move would have consequences for British industry and result in job losses. The High Court has found in favour of the local authority. Electric buses are set to run on Dover's fast track service for the first time, 15 months after it officially launched. It was meant to be zero emission, but has been operating with diesel vehicles because of problems with delivery schedules and infrastructure. Operators Stagecoach say 5 electric buses will be ready to roll out next month. The Mayor of Sevenoaks says vandals who are repeatedly causing damage to a toddler's playground need to stop. It's after a spate of attacks at the Buckhurst Lane play area at Environment Park. Damage has been done to a fenced-off play area designed specifically for toddlers, with equipment including rockers, a mini trampoline and a small climbing frame. Councillor Tony Clayton says it's a really important place for families.
It's sited right in the town centre. It's about 300 yards from the high street. And it's on the way from the high street into Knoll Park. So there are a lot of people who actually walk through it on the way to visit Knoll House and Knoll Park. And it's in a rather nice wood, which is full of parakeets. So it's a really attractive place. And the town council has taken over part of it, and it's installed an older children's playground with a zip wire and a big climbing frame and swings and things, and a slide. And it's also got a toddler's play area. And the toddler's play area is separated off with a fence so that the dogs and the foxes don't get into it. And also so that the bigger kids don't get onto it and damage the equipment and make it unsafe for the toddlers. The problem we've had is that it's about half a dozen times now since September. Somebody has removed the outside fencing just by kicking all the palings off the rails. And in a couple of cases, they've actually kicked over the posts. So we've had to reset the posts in concrete, which is expensive. And we'd much rather the toddler's play area was safe for small children. So it does need a fence around it. And we'd also rather spend our time improving the play area rather than keep on fixing the fence.
The most recent incident required around 10 hours of staff time, while around 30 hours were spent restoring the fencing in November alone. Kent Police say they are aware of the vandalism.
Kent Online News.
The family of a Gravesend hairdresser who's died at the age of 89 have described him as completely selfless. Angelo Antonio Sestaro was known as Tony. He ran the former Fishers for Men barbershop on Windmill Street before opening other sites in the county. He'd grown up in southern Italy before moving to London and then to the county. Last month, he was admitted to hospital following a fall and passed away after developing pneumonia. The parents of a young paramedic who died in an ambulance crash near Sevenoaks are going to be given an award by the King on behalf of their daughter. Alice Clark had only recently qualified when she was killed in a collision on the A21 4 years ago. The 21-year-old's mum and dad will receive the Elizabeth emblem in recognition of her service. A Canterbury man is threatening to chain himself to an historic lamppost if local bosses try to tear it down. Kent County Council announced plans to replace hundreds of Victorian cast iron lampposts across the city if they are deemed unsafe, as repairs would be too expensive. Former City Councillor Richard Parkinson has been cleaning and repainting the one opposite his home in St Peter's Lane and says they all must be preserved.
Well, I think it's absolutely a disgraceful idea. There is a certain element of people running this city who are determined to wreck it somehow or other, and that includes the Westgate Towers as well. They are very characterful. They're full of, antiquated charm and so forth. And if you go and stick up some grotesque stainless steel poles, it won't look good at all. When they say they erode and corrode, cast iron does not corrode. And the problem is that they are trying to persuade everybody that they should be taken out because it's eroding. I'm going to chain myself to it if along comes the machinery to take it away.
A Chatham woman has received an apology from global online marketplace Vinted. Heather Hughes had sold an ornament over the app, but it was returned damaged by the buyer, who'd refused to accept it, and Heather lost out on £40. After photos proved she'd sent the package in perfect condition, she was offered full compensation, but has now deleted her account. After 30 years of life-saving duties, Margate RNLI's last serving Mersey-class lifeboat has stood down from active service. The all-weather Leonard Kent has responded to 490 COVID-19 service calls saved 21 lives and helped nearly 600 people since arriving in the county in the 90s. It's marked its place in history as the last serving Mersey-class lifeboat in the RNLI fleet.
Kent Online Sports.
Football Now and Chatham Town are urging Kent football fans to get behind their women's team in the FA Cup this weekend. They're hosting York City Ladies in the fourth round after reaching this stage of the competition for the first time. It's hoped a big crowd will turn out. Kickoff on Sunday is at 1 p.m. Elsewhere, Gillingham's managing director insists the club are still on the right path despite their current League Two position. Joe Comper says they have a two-year plan and are happy with the hard work being put in by the team. The Gills are heading into this weekend's game against Newport County in 16th place following a run of disappointing results. And in tennis, Ken's Emma Raducanu has been knocked out in the quarterfinals of the Hobart International. She was beaten in straight sets by world number 204 Taylor Preston. The 23-year-old from Orpington will now be turning her attention to the Australian Open. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups, and exclusive stories. You can get the subscription plan that works best for you. For more details, head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.